Abi. Okay, tough. Okay, tough. Panima, Panima.
I got this time?
I was angry. Panima, Panima. Okay. Vayigashi love Yehuda. So there's a real dramatic shift between the submission and the surrender of the end of Parshas Miketz and the resilience and the confrontation of Parshas Vayigash. In the end of Miketz, Yehuda is resigned to the fact, they've been caught red-handed, we'll all be slaves, I'll be a slave. Essentially, he gives up. He surrenders to Yosef, to this foreign tyrant who appears to have the upper hand because they were caught red-handed. Then all of a sudden, the tide shifts. Vayigashi love Yehuda. All of a sudden, he gets this renewed confidence, this renewed energy to confront Yosef and, of course, to ultimately vanquish Yosef, because Yehuda causes Yosef to admit. So what changes between Miketz and Vayigash? It's a very abrupt shift if you look at it carefully. Vayigash elav Yehuda in the end of Miketz. So we would think it's because it's desperation. Dakat tishim, it's the last minute, it's the last 2 minutes. You do your best, you nothing to lose. You pull out all stops. For the Ishbits, this is a special trait that HaKadosh Baruch Hu endows Yehuda with, not to give up, not to be Mesiyash. And Yehuda would be Messiah-ish in Miketz for two reasons. Number one, because the deck is stacked against him, because Yosef, this foreign tyrant, has caught them red-handed, so there's nothing to do when you're caught and when you're cornered other than to surrender. Number two, because Yehuda's starting to feel a little bit guilty. Maybe I shouldn't have been so forward with my father and say, well, if I don't bring Binyamin back, I'll lose my Olam Haba, the way Rashi interprets, V'chatasu l'chal kal yamin, that I'll abdicate Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. Maybe that was too hasty. Maybe that was too impetuous. Maybe I gave up too much. And now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is almost angry with me or abandoning me and not assisting me in this confrontation with Yehuda. So it's not just that he's facing an uphill battle, but he's starting to feel guilty. And guilt always gnaws at you. And guilt always diminishes or strips your confidence and incapacitates your ability to perform. So Yehuda's really struggling with guilt as well as with just the objectives that he's facing seemingly an inconquerable enemy. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu empowers Yehuda with the gift of resilience, with the gift to avoid despair, with the gift to avoid surrender, with the gift to avoid Yeish. This is not just a trait for Yehuda, this is a trait for Shevet Yehuda that will ultimately trickle down to the Jewish people. And when we talk a lot about Chassidus, providing some answer to this long and interminable galus that we've already find ourselves in 1750, where we've been in galus for 1700 years, and it seems to be darkening rather than improving, and it seems to be deteriorating before our eyes. The 18th century, one of the worst periods is to live in the last 2,000 years. It's a very dark period in Judaism. Chassidus' answer, you're probably more familiar with it from Rav Nachman, now a lot of be Mesiyash, Ein Yeush Ba'olam. This is a current theme that reappears throughout Chassidus. Yehuda is essentially the first Chassid. He finds himself in that dark corner without any hope, presuming he failed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's able to respond and to have this resurgence. Vayigashi elav Yehuda. So this is Chassidus on display. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unique trait being delivered to Am Yisrael through Shevet Yehuda. That's part one of this piece. Part two of the piece is very interesting. Seemingly unrelated. I'm not sure that there's any relationship between the two. Yehuda struggles with this ferocious, ferocious enemy who seems to be indomitable. Then it turns out it's his brother. So not only does Yehuda triumph, it turns out he never had a... It was all mirage. It was all just a facade. It was all just a show. He was never fighting any enemy. The enemy was his brother. It's not like he triumphed, but he triumphed in a manner that displayed that the enemy was never really an enemy. He was never really in danger. That's also a template or a model for Jewish history. We'll fight these enemies, but then when we triumph over them, we'll realize, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately was supporting us, so no enemy has any power or ability. We just thought they did. It just seemed that way. Then it turned out, as I say, they're all paper tigers. They all just air. They all vanish. They all evaporate. Because a beautiful pasuk in Tehillim, pasuk is, the Od Ma'at is in Tehillim Lamed Zayin, Vein Rasha, you'll turn around, there'll be no Rasha, Vizbonanta, and you'll think about it, Al Mekamo, about his place, Veinenu. Ve'od Ma'at Ve'en Rasha, Vizbonanta Al Mekamo Veinenu. Which means, not that you'll triumph over Rashaim, but your enemies will be revealed as not having any threat or danger It's just we felt that way. But ultimately, that's what Jews have done throughout the centuries. All of a sudden, we defeat these great enemies who turn out to be paper tigers, Nebuchadnezzar, the Soviet Union, all these enemies that we're able to withstand and stand up to. And this is all typecast by the confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef, that Yosef is the enemy. Yosef's not really the enemy. Yosef is just some, in this case, he's his brother. But Yaakov's children were never really in danger because their brother was controlling their fate. So really two different stages of this Ishbitz. Number one, about Yehuda's resilience and avoidance of Yeush, of surrender or despair. That becomes a model for Am Yisrael. Number two, that when we defeat our enemies, we don't just triumph, but we prove that we never really face danger. And that's all displayed in Parshas Vayigash. Have a good week and a half, everyone. Next year we'll be in Mirtz Hashem Tuesday. In a week and a half, because I'm traveling to Chutzlarts. So, to JC, to Hefter, not to DRS, to TABC, not to Manchester. Have a good weekend. Yeah.